concept of our theme tonight is about faithfulness. And when we talk about being faithful to someone, basically what we're meaning is that that we stay firm in our support for them. And I guess it's a self-evident truth almost that if we want to build relationships with people, successful relationships with people, we need to be faithful. Now, this message tonight is number 7 in a series of 9 that I've been doing on 9 secrets of satisfying relationships. And we've looked at all sorts of qualities without which we cannot sustain long-term relationships, not simply in marriage, but among friends. I guess as we all know, there are relationships in our society breaking down all the time today. And it's partly for that reason that I've been doing this series. So tonight is about faithfulness. Of faithfulness is the ability to be trusted. And so this is really what I want to talk about tonight. Now, you will have got an outline with the newsletter as you came in tonight. And I want to make 3 points tonight about faithfulness. And first of all, I want to talk about faithfulness in everyday relationships. I guess it's obvious for all of us that society simply can't function without faithfulness in relationships. Without trust, civil society as we know it simply can't function. About 20 years ago, I was in Indonesia. And I was there for several weeks, and as part of this, I was taken in a jeep around South Sumatra. It's a very interesting experience. We went around the Trans-Sumatran highway, which is not a multi-lane motorway. It's a series of potholes joined together by some rough track. And I was in this jeep and being driven by an Australian missionary. And for the best part of a week, we bounced around the Trans-Sumatran Highway. There were very few normal facilities available. If you had to get out of the truck and go for a walk, at one point they said, "We don't go too far into the jungle here, there are tigers around." So. But one of the experiences that I remember is that it was the dead of night, and we were supposed to be heading for some place where I was supposed to be speaking. And as we went down the highway, the jeep started coughing and spluttering and so on, and we ground to a halt. So here we were; it's pitch dark and hot, and we climbed out of the jeep. And the Aussie driver, he said to me. He drained some petrol out of the tank and he said, "I thought so. What's that?" He said, "They water in the petrol to make it go further." And he said, "Where we filled up back there, that's what they've done. So they make money on the side." So he started sucking the petrol out of the and getting a flow of it and had to drain the whole thing. Of course, then there was the problem of where you got petrol in the middle of a tiger-infested jungle in the middle of the night. And I don't actually remember the end of the story, but I do remember we got going and eventually we ended this place and everyone had left by the time I got there, and I never did get to speak at this place. I heard a story of a man who'd been a missionary in India, and he was in the city of Madras, and he was in the suburban area, and he noticed the people in the houses were waiting for the milkman to come. And eventually the milkman came, and when he came, it was a man pulling a cow. And he was just leading the cow from house to house, and the people from the house would come out with a bucket, and they'd get their daily supply of milk. And so, being of a curious frame of mind, he said to a woman there, why doesn't he just leave the milk? "Because we can't trust him. He waters it down." And there's a lot of societies like New Zealand where there has been a Christian heritage as part of our value system, where we have up till now anyway assumed that there's a level of trust in society which may be getting eroded now. But society cannot be built, and long-term relationships cannot be built without trust and faithfulness. The week before last, I had a phone call. And it was a fellow that I went to school with, and I haven't seen him since then, which was, that's a long time ago. And he was in Christchurch. He lives in Auckland, and he was down in Christchurch, and he must have had some time to spare, and he actually called in to see me at work here, but I was busy, and afterwards they told me this chap had called in, and I recognized the name, and I said, I used to go to school with him, the high school. And he left a number, so I called him that night. And we got talking about old times and so on, and we talked about one or two people, and he said, do you remember this particular chap? And I remember him well. He said, do you know where he is? I said, no. He said, he's in jail. I said, he's not. He said, yeah. He's working for this firm, and he did them in, he said, over years, $1.3 million. Now he's doing time. He said, do you remember this other guy? And he mentioned the name of a mutual colleague. I said, yeah. I said, he said, you know where he is? I said, he's not there too. I said, yeah, he is. White collar crime. Engaged in by people of my standing. And I thought, isn't this interesting? I mean, society cannot function without people who are committed to lifestyles of faithfulness. And I said to him, are we about the only ones that have managed to stay out? Faithfulness in everyday relationships. Society can't function unless we are committed. Unless there is a society where people are committed to living virtuous lives, for being faithful people. I mean, we take all this kind of stuff just for granted. And we probably do. But society can't function without faithfulness in everyday relationships. But when we talk about faithfulness in relationships, most often we think of it in terms of marriage. This is what I want to talk about for a little while tonight, about faithfulness in marriage, because no marriage can work, can ever succeed, unless you can be depended on. Now, if you're entering into a marriage, if you are not a person who can be depended upon, I can tell you now that your marriage won't work. You've got to be able to be trusted. That when difficulties arise in your marriage, not if, but when, because they do arrive. You put two people together, they're like two spinning cogs, and they grind together at the beginning of a marriage relationship. And after a while, you've got to find some kind of synchromesh gear to help them engage amicably together. But there are always difficulties in a relationship. And a faithful person is someone, when the difficult days arrive, you don't think, I'm going to walk. You don't go into marriage with one eye on the exit, thinking, well, if this doesn't work, we'll always try divorce. A marriage which is entered into like this, as I know so many marriages are today, doesn't work. And so many people today wring their hands in despair and say, why isn't marriage working? And some other government department puts out a report and so on. As long as two people enter a marriage relationship with this kind of attitude, there is no reason why it should not work. That you are committed, that when the difficult times come, you say, look, you can count on me. I am not going to walk out on you. I am committed to acting with integrity in this relationship. And I appreciated, Peter and Rosemary, what you were sharing with us up here tonight about this. This faithfulness in marriage covers a whole lot of things, right through all these different aspects of marriage. When on the other hand, we talk about unfaithfulness in marriage, interestingly enough, it only means one thing. If you are unfaithful in marriage, it means you have a sexual relationship with someone other than the person you are married to. And this is why adultery is so painful. Adultery is sexual sin, but adultery is more than that. Adultery tears at the very fabric of marriage, which is mutual trust, without which marriage cannot work. And when someone commits adultery in a marriage, it is tearing apart the very fabric of the marriage. And such pain ensues. Now, I know that today there are all sorts of idiot voices being raised in society, and you see them on the television, and they write in magazines, and they say, well, today in our enlightened society, we know that sexual behavior is a matter of personal choice. And if you want to choose a lifestyle of personal faithfulness to one person through your life, that's your choice. But over here, I choose another lifestyle, and I want to have sex with all sorts of people, and it's a matter of personal opinion, and who's to say who's right and who's wrong. And this, we are subject to a barrage of this stuff all the time. I said these are idiot voices. And they say to us, all I need is I've got certain sexual needs and I want to meet them. And if you choose to meet your sexual needs this way, well, that's up to you, but I choose to meet them a different way over here. My question would be, what's the outcome of the two lifestyles? Which lifestyle is it that in which there is deep nurture and emotional nourishment and fulfillment and trust and long-term hope? It's interesting today, a couple of generations ago, people used to talk about adultery. Now they talk about having an affair, which has a mysterious sense of excitement about it. Clandestine thing. Adultery, well, everyone knows adultery is that's a bad word, you know. Adultery is not, but an affair. Well, that sounds kind of French, doesn't it? Ooh la la. You know, kind of. Like kissing on the streets of Paris, and all this, very romantic, and it's illusory. Well, it's okay, some people say. It's okay so long as you don't get caught, you know. It could be good for a marriage, someone said to me. You have several of them going. Enables you to keep living with your wife, one guy said to me. You know what I want to say to you? Probably some in a crowd this size, there'll be some of you here tonight will be believing this stuff. What I want to say to you is, just get real. You are being unfaithful. It is not possible to build long-term relationships with people unless you are a person who can be trusted. I've noticed a bizarre situation that's developed in our society today, particularly in relation to politicians. Now, you're going to have a politician who is terribly unfaithful in their personal life. They're unfaithful to their wife or their husband, as the case may be. And people say, and then they come, they appear in public, and they make lots of statements, and they give us their word. And they ask us to believe them. Now, my question is this of these people, of whom our country has many. If you are a person that the person who is closest and dearest to you cannot trust your word, how on earth can the rest of us be expected to trust you? And the argument that is advanced in today's enlightened society is that this is just your private life. And what you do in your private life is of no concern to anyone but yourself. And what you do in the public life, when you get up on the political platform, that is what matters. But what you do in your private life, well, that's your own concern. Would that life were that simple. If you in your private life are a person who cannot be trusted, how on earth can anyone trust you in your public utterances? If the person whom you have pledged your life to live alongside and love right through your life cannot trust you, then how on earth can the rest of us trust you? And so we have a serious growing problem in our society, and people have coped with this unfaithfulness in loving relationships by saying, well, it's just your private life. I just want to say, hey, get real. All of life is a whole. You can't divide your life into what's public and what's private. This is just the latest device to justify behavior that is not only offensive to God, but deeply painful to people. You're being unfaithful. And that's why you're experiencing pain. If you are involved sexually with someone you are not married to, internally you are being torn in two, and you know that. So why are you trying to pretend and say, I'm different? You may try and rationalize this to yourself, but when it comes out, you have deceived the one whom you have professed to love. And that's why adultery is so painful. It rips at the heart of relationships because it's unfaithfulness. And it is destructive to relationships. Unless we can be trusted, you cannot have long-term relationships. There's a very famous story in the Bible about King David. And he committed adultery with a woman named Bathsheba. And a couple of years ago, I was going through. Here on Sunday mornings, we have a different kind of service, which is a lot of worship and praise. And I give teaching from the Bible. Here at night, I talk on themes. But in the morning, I take a book of the Bible, and we go through it. And I was going through the book in the Bible, which 2 Samuel, which has the story of David's life in it. I was going to be coming in a few weeks' time to this incident, and I knew it was coming up. And there was a person in the church, he came to me and said, look, in 3 weeks' time you're going to be speaking on David and Bathsheba. And I said, that's right. They said, I've been in an adulterous relationship, and what I want to do is I want to plead with you, when you get up there, just tell people, it's just so painful, it's just not worth it. And I said, I'll do that. And I did. Whether anyone listened or not, I don't know, but I sure hope they did. So how do you avoid unfaithfulness? Unfaithfulness in a marriage has more potential than anything else to bring its termination. How do you avoid unfaithfulness? Let me mention three very simple things. Number one is to cultivate friendship. Become your spouse's best friend. Become the best friend to your spouse. I came across an interesting saying that someone said, it may be easy to leave your spouse, but it's very difficult to leave your best friend. These are three very simple things. Number one, make sure your partner in marriage is your best friend. Put in the time together. Cultivate friendship. Number two is avoid fantasizing. When you run into the difficult times in a marriage, the easiest thing in the world is to start fantasizing about this other person who delivers all the things that your spouse doesn't deliver. And it is so easy to do that. And we all do that in different ways at different times when we encounter difficult periods in a marriage. It's fruitless. Just be real appreciative for the person God's given to you. Avoid fantasizing. It is a dead-end street. Because the other person in your mind is just simply that. They're a fantasy. They're not real. And God's given you a real flesh and blood person. And learn to love them. And number three is a very simple one. Beware of sexual chemistry. You know what I mean? Just the excitement of attraction. Your eyes meet. You might work together. You might have been working together for quite some time in a normal relationship, and then one day something goes off. And you think, what's happening here? And or maybe it's in some other social setting you've met that person. And you find after a while you're starting to look forward to meeting with that person more than you do meeting with other people. And then you start arranging things so you get to meet them. And you rationalize to yourself and say, well, there's nothing wrong with this. The key issue is to be honest. And think, why am I finding that I'm looking forward to meeting with this person? And at this stage, what I'd say to you, do something at that stage. Because once it starts getting beyond that, then you're on a slippery slope and it gets faster and faster as you go down. As has been said by some wise person, if you don't want to get stung, stay away from the bees. Now, let me talk to those of you who failed in this area. You've been unfaithful. You've been sexually unfaithful. Three things for you. Number one, name the sin for what it is. Stop justifying your own sinfulness. And you say, well, you know, people say this stuff to you. Well, maybe it's wrong for some people, but it's okay for me. Anyway, I feel good about this. This is self-justifying rubbish, about which I will say no more. You've got to name the thing for what it is. I have been unfaithful. Number two, terminate the relationship. Full stop. Oh, we just like one final night together. When we can say our goodbyes to each other. Yeah. People say this stuff. You know, it'll be all right. just one last time. Terminate the relationship, as in terminate. Maybe you've got to change jobs. Maybe you've got to move. Maybe you've got to go someplace where you terminate the relationship. I've met people who've been serious about this who've actually changed countries because they've realized if they persisted with this relationship, it was going to be a dead end to the one relationship that they held more dear than anything else. Now, I want to say a word of you to if you're struggling with this. Maybe in this area of your life or in some other way, you're struggling. You feel, I'm not sure if I am really a faithful person. Hey, I'm being unfaithful and I'm struggling about this. What I want to say to you is that you're welcome here. This is a place for strugglers. This is a community of forgiven sinners. All of us struggle in different areas of our lives. All of us struggle in different areas of our lives at different times and in different ways. And we have discovered through knowing the forgiveness of Jesus, there's not much to be gained in life by throwing stones at other people's struggles and condemning people who maybe struggle with stuff that we don't struggle with ourselves. Although sometimes people throw the biggest stones at those who struggle with the same things they struggle with themselves, which is interesting. Because all of us need the forgiveness that only the confession of our sin can bring. So if you're unfaithful in some area of your life and you know it and you're seeking to face up to this and you're struggling with it, I want to say you're welcome here. We're a community of strugglers. We're all sinners. And the one thing that a person who's a follower of Jesus, the first thing you know is that you're a sinner. You've done unfaithful things. You've hurt people. It's the first qualification for knowing Jesus. Okay, this is a community of forgiven sinners. So that's the second thing. First thing is about faithfulness is needed in everyday relationships. The second thing is that faithfulness is the cornerstone of marriage. And the third thing I want to talk about is being faithful to God, faithfulness to God. I've noticed an interesting thing happen. This used to really distress me. That I would see people who started off as followers of Jesus and they started making progress in the Christian life, and then as soon as things got difficult, they walked out on us and walked away from their faith in Jesus, or they walked away from an active Christian life and said, well, I still believe all this stuff, you know, I just don't do anything about it anymore. In other words, I've become a hypocrite. I used to get amazed with this. I used to think, now how is it? Here's someone who's known the wonder of God's forgiveness and the joy that comes with this and the warmth of real Christian support and encouragement. And then the difficulties come. And the difficulties always come. In every relationship, there are difficulties that come. That's the nature of life. The only place where there are no difficulties is heaven. That doesn't happen here. And some people get so unreal about this stuff. So you become a follower of Jesus and the difficulties come. And someone says, oh, there are difficulties here. I wasn't expecting this. I'm going to walk out on it. Now I got amazed with this stuff. I thought, how could people do it? And then one day the penny dropped. I thought, no, I shouldn't be amazed with this because this is what people in our society are doing in every area of life now. As soon as difficulties arise in the marriage, I'll walk. As soon as I'm at work and it gets difficult at work, I'll walk. I'm in some sports club and I don't like the way they bowl the cricket ball at me or whatever it is, I'll walk. So, same thing, the spirit of the age. If I'm not getting my way and it's not working out the way I want to work out and it's getting a bit difficult, I'll walk out on it. You know what happens to people who do this? And I guess some of you are like this. I don't know. I would imagine you are. Do you know what it does? It means you have stunted emotional growth right through your life. Because every time you run into a difficulty, you'll walk out. And the only way we grow as people is through learning to cope with difficulties and growing through them. I want to read a passage from the Bible. This eventually I was going to get to this. This is in the Old Testament. There was a fellow named Habakkuk. And Habakkuk, he was a prophet. And he had a bad experience. And he tells us about it. He says, fig trees may no longer bloom, or vineyards produce grapes. Olive trees may be fruitless and harvest time a failure. Sheep pens may be empty and cattle stalls vacant. He's a farmer, okay? Everything that you could conceive of going wrong has gone wrong. I mean, trying to think of something else that could happen. You see what he says? But I will still celebrate because the Lord God saves me. That's faithfulness. This is a man who's saying, look, I don't care what goes wrong. I have settled this with God. I know that God loves me and he has forgiven me. And I'm going to say to God, God, I'm going to follow you and I'm going to serve you. Even if the fig trees don't bloom, the vineyards don't produce grapes anymore, and the olive trees are fruitless, and the harvest time's a failure, and the sheep pens are empty, and the cattle stalls are vacant. I mean, he's in a bad way. And there's so many people around today say, oh, God's let me down. He says, well, so, he says, not me. He says, because my faith doesn't just depend on external things in life going well for me. That's not faith, that's egocentrism. That's putting yourself at the middle of the universe. As long as things go right for me, I'll follow God. Bizarre. That's not biblical faith. Shame on you when you think like that. Thank you. We'll leave Habakkuk. I read of this book about 200 years ago. There was a young English Christian who, when the French were fighting the English, and they, you know, their wars went on for years and years, decades, and he was a young English soldier, and he got captured by the French, and they turned him into a galley slave. You know, they had these war boats, and those they rowed them, and this guy ends up right down in the bilge, and he's in rowing. And apparently the conditions were unspeakable, terrible. They fed these guys. They were slaves, chained to the place on the boat. And they fed them on bread and water. They denied them opportunities to get off at the port and this kind of stuff. And you know how long he lived like that? 50 years. And eventually he wrote his life story. It's called 50 Years a Galley Slave. Imagine it. What else could go wrong in life? I mean, it sounds a bit miserable to me. You know what he says? At the beginning, the introduction to his book, do you know what he says? This is on the flyleaf. He says, I thank God for the high privilege of having served so kind and gentle a master as the Lord Jesus. Wow. Oh, that's faithfulness. Yeah. Faithfulness to God. God, I don't care how bad things get. I'm going to be faithful to you. That's faithfulness. Faithfulness is not being a fair weather friend to your friends or to God. But how do you get to be faithful? If it's such, it is a wonderful quality, faithfulness. If you know you can be trusted, it is such a key ingredient in a relationship. But how do you get it? How do you get it? Well, I want to read a story. I'm getting near the end tonight, but I want to read a story. Jesus was going through Jericho, where a man named Zacchaeus lived. He was in charge of collecting taxes and was very rich. Jesus was heading his way, and Zacchaeus wanted to see what he was like, but Zacchaeus was a short man and couldn't see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree. When Jesus got there, he looked up and said, Zacchaeus, hurry down. I want to stay with you today. Zacchaeus hurried down and gladly welcomed Jesus. Everyone who saw this started grumbling, this man Zacchaeus is a sinner and Jesus is going home to eat with him. Later that day, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, I'll give half of my property to the poor and I will now pay back four times as much to everyone I have cheated. Jesus said to Zacchaeus, today you and your family have been saved because you are a true son of Abraham. The Son of Man came to look for and to save people who are lost. I'll tell you a bit about this fellow. He was a tax collector. The Romans who were occupying Israel in those days had a system of collecting taxes which opened itself to abuse. The Romans set a figure for taxes, but no one knew what it was, and you tendered for the right to sell taxes. And so you went out and you charged your friends and your fellow countrymen and so on, whatever the market would stand. And so tax people got very, very rich, and they were hated. They were hated, deeply hated by the people. Now this would have gone on for years and years. So Zacchaeus was a very rich man. But within, imagine what he lived with all these years. People kind of spitting on it, spitting on the footpath when he walked past. Hated by people. And Jesus comes to town. And he thinks, well, Jesus will take no interest in me. I mean, I'm just such a bad guy. And Jesus, but anyway, he climbs a tree. One, because he was short, and two, because no one else would probably let him through the crowd. And Jesus stops. I'm coming to your place, he said. And after a day with Jesus, he says here, and he says, I'll give half of my property to the poor, and I'll now pay back four times as much to everyone I've ever cheated. Now the Jewish law said that if you were caught for stealing, you had to pay back four times over. So all he was doing there was what was required, but the other half wasn't. I'll give half of my property to the poor. Here was a man who couldn't be trusted. Here was an unfaithful man in his relationships. People couldn't trust him, but he encountered Jesus, and a whole new process begins in his life. He starts becoming a faithful man who you can trust. And this is where you begin. If you want to become a faithful person, you put your faith in the one who's faithful to us, who's committed his life to you and died for you. That's where you begin. And as you put your trust in him, you can grow into a faithful person. You know, sometimes I think that it's like we think, all right, I'm going to give my life to God and I'm going to be faithful to him. And it's like, I imagine like $1,000, and I put it before God and I say, God, here's my life, everything. I'll be faithful to you. And I think it's more like God takes the $1,000 and he gives it back to us in 10-cent pieces. And he says, look, faithfulness is not about one big deal where you say, God, I'm going to be faithful. It's about little acts of faithfulness right through life. Turning up when you said you'd turn up. Being friends to someone when you said you'd be friends. Now, if it's a gift, you've either got it or you haven't. The Bible doesn't talk about faithfulness as a gift. It says it's a fruit. And a fruit is something that grows. When there's a process of life in a tree, the fruit will appear. And if you want to become a really faithful person, you become really committed to Jesus Christ. So tonight, to be a faithful person, it's about making two commitments. Number one is a commitment to Jesus Christ. And number two is to live a life of faithfulness. You want to develop a relationship that is meaningful, that is long-lasting, that is satisfying, learn to be faithful. How do you learn to be faithful? You get committed to the one who's been faithful to us, and then you say, Jesus, I'm going to let you grow this fruit of faithfulness in my life, and I'm going to demonstrate it in my marriage and elsewhere in my life.